Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Well, delighted that Jordan Murphy has taken some time out to join us in studio. You're off on your holidays tonight. It is a very flying visit back home. And with the way things have gone at Leicester this season, such a stressful season, I'd imagine you're looking forward to your break.
Yeah, very much so. Really tough season at Leicester. I've been involved with professional rugby for about 20 years now, 20 seasons. This is my coming into my 20th year, and definitely the toughest season I've endured. Certainly on and off the field, we've had a lot of tops and tips and turns. And as you said, I'm quite looking forward to a little bit of a break.
Yeah, so let me go through this. Sacked director of rugby, Richard Cockerill, at the start of the year. Then Aaron Major came in, gone again in March. Matt O'Connor takes over for the end of the season. You get a game in charge as well in there. And ultimately, Leicester end up conceding a try 3 minutes from time in the Premiership semi-final. You lose that game to Wasps by a single point. You can see why you'd need a break.
Yeah, it goes even further. We lost our defensive coach just before all of this started. So we lost our defence coach first, and then lost Richard Cockerill, then lost Aaron Major, lost some strength and conditioning coaches as well. So it was a pretty traumatic season all in. And as you say, we managed with a young team to go out and get some silver in the Anglo-Welsh Trophy, which is probably a second-tier competition, really. But young kids played very well and did well to get some medals. And as you said, then we lost in the 77th minute against Wasps. And, we lost by 1 point, and a couple of decisions at key times really went against us. So although it was a horrible season, I think the resilience that was shown in the team was pretty impressive. And the guys came back, and on the back of some big losses and some really traumatic things both on and off the field, they fronted up and played some good rugby. So I hope that that stands us in good stead for the next year.
What are you doing when all this disruption is going on? Because I guess you would have been pretty well tied in with Richard Cockerill over the last 7-8 years, from moving from a player into the coaching staff. Quite often when the director of rugby goes, everybody goes.
Yeah, it was a strange one, really, in that Richard Cockerill actually was my first landlord when I arrived in Leicester in 1997. I rented an apartment from him, and so I knew him very well. He'd been there and sort of part of my life in playing days and in my coaching days. He was the guy who gave me my first opportunity when I retired from the game. So I owe him a debt of gratitude. So it was a really tough time, as you said. Couple that with Aaron Major, the guy who came in next is a very good friend of mine and still is. It was tough when Cockers went. I think it's one of those strange ones that he'd been in charge for a long time, and he'd always sort of said, "Well, it's my head on the block. It's my head on the block." And certainly, a few results didn't go our way, and the board really felt it was time to make a change. But it was definitely tough. It was something that I don't think anyone would have seen at the start of the year, and Cockers was, I suppose he handled it very, very well. He turned around and everyone sort of said, maybe it's time to take a little bit of a break from the game that you've been involved in with for a long time. But he chose not to, went straight to Toulon, and obviously he has them in the top 14 final now. So shows his calibre and his pedigree. And I think he's done a really good job, and I'm sure he will do a good job for Edinburgh next year.
Can you park the personal side of things quite easily?
It's like anything. It's really tough, and it's something that's always been tough for me in rugby. In a squad, and we always talk about having a tight knit squad, and we talk about family in rugby circles. And every year, in a 40-man playing squad, we generally lose about 10 players. They move on to different teams, and 10 more come in. So it's a big turnover. Mm. And that day at the end of the season, I've always found it the toughest day. It's really sad because you've sort of built up some great memories with these guys, and then all of a sudden they're gone. So
I guess this is slightly different, though. It's even more intense because, as you say, you've a 2-decade-long connection with Richard Cockerill. Is there an understanding on both sides that just because he goes, he understands that you have your professional ambitions, that you have your own separate job?
Yeah, no, very much so. I think it was like that. Cockerill, we talked about how he originally got his run in the game, and he started as an assistant coach, and we'd had Marcelo Lofreda, who left just before the end of the season or got sacked in 2007-2008 season, and Richard sort of took over on an interim basis for a couple of games at the end of that year, and then he went back to being an assistant coach under Heineke Meyer. And when Heineke left, he got his opportunity to step into a little bit of a bigger role and sort of perceived more experience. There was never a case of us going. I think the board sort of made the decision that Cockers was, had his time had run its course, and he was to go, and we were sort of all told that we were to do our best to try and keep things as smooth as possible and to try and transition him out and make sure that the playing group were able to focus on their job week to week.
I've read about three different job titles for you currently, from backs coach to skills and attack coach to assistant coach. What are you doing right now?
It's really simple. It's an assistant coach, so kind of doing all of the above. You know, I started off doing a lot of the skills and kicking, which is something that I'm still doing. I've been doing a bit of attack for the last 2 years. So groups, you know, we're very lucky now. Matt O'Connor, our head coach, is kind of oversees pretty much everything. You know, I'll do a team attack, but, you know, he's got the full power to come in and basically kibosh that or stop that or tweak any of the systems that I want to put in place. And couple that with, you know, I do some work with the forwards on their skills, do some work with the forwards on their shape. So I think just the way we've been rolling, it's kind of just really an assistant coach is probably the best way to describe it.
Is that a different role to what you were doing under Richard Cockerell in terms of the amount of influence you had? So you're saying there, Matt O'Connor comes in, he has a way that he wants to play. He wants you to implement that. How much freedom of expression do you get?
No, I think quite a lot. I think it's quite good. It's not always like we have general systems the way we want to play under Matt. But for me in team attack, you know, I'm watching a lot of the opposition. I'm coming up with plays. I'm coming up with patterns and multi-phase plays to try and break down opposition. Now, Matt, obviously, as the head coach, he's got the right to say, well, actually, you know, I think A, B, C will work and maybe we'll tweak D. It's been pretty good. It's pretty similar, I think, you know, over the course of my 4-year coaching career, which isn't a long time. In coaching terms, but, you know, I just certainly feel that I've developed and you know, I'm learning a lot from the guys I've worked with. I'm very lucky that I've got to work with some really good coaches. So it's been a good time.
Those 4 years, did your coaching career start before those 4 years? Were you thinking about when you were those last few years when you were playing about, all right, these are the coaches I would like to follow in the footsteps of, the guys who inspired you? Was that the way you were thinking, or was it something, I've retired, now I need to think in a whole new light?
No, definitely. I'd sort of, at the start of my playing career, I never thought I'd be interested in coaching. It wasn't really until I'd become captain of Leicester Tigers and, you know, really sort of started taking much more of an interest in it, watching a lot more footage off the field. And I suppose in my last couple of years, key injuries at big times and seasons were giving you that block where you get to sit back and you kind of get to watch a game, and sort of coaches would come and ask you, you know, what you thought and what your experience was, and you actually sort of feel, actually, I've got a really valid point here. And that was probably the first time that I thought, yeah, actually, I'd really like to do this. A couple of times when I was injured, just to, you know, keep my sanity, I was given the opportunity to coach academy teams and sevens teams and different bits and pieces. And I suppose that's where the sort of I thought I actually really would enjoy this. And sort of through that, managed to sort of start my levels of coaching and get through a few of those. And that's kind of where it started, and sort of just been trying to keep going.
And who are the coaches you'd look at right now at the very top level, attack-wise, who you feel are the most innovative guys, the guys who... we're really setting the bar the highest?
Oh, I think, you know, Gregor Townsend's done a great job. It'd be really interesting to see how he gets on with Scotland. I think Tony Brown in the Southern Hemisphere obviously is renowned as being probably one of the most innovative coaches around. The Lions in South Africa are playing some really interesting style of rugby. You know, I've not had many dealings with Joe Schmidt, but obviously, you know, we all know what he's capable and what he can do. And I've heard a lot from the guys from within the camp about the way he coaches. And obviously that's pretty impressive as well.
Yeah, because they're... is criticism, and there's often criticism, especially over the last couple of years, that Ireland have been far too predictable in attack under Schmidt.
I don't know. I think that certainly when I watch it, and again, I'm talking from the outside because I haven't had any dealings on the inside of the camp. I think, you know, certainly on key occasions, we win big games on the back of, you know, what seem to be set plays that he probably puts together. So I think, you know, whatever you... certainly in my experience so far, whatever you spend a lot of your time on is what you're going to get your pay at. So you could probably argue anything, really, but I know he does a pretty good job.
How much of what you work on the training pitch is influenced by the players at your disposal? I'm thinking of someone like Manu Tuilagi, that, right, you might have an idea of set pieces, of plays that you want, but at the same time, you've got this 17-stone guy who you can just give the ball to and you can just barge through everybody.
Yeah, I think it's a huge amount. I think, you know, you have your patterns and style of play that you want to have, but it's all relevant to the bodies that you've got on the field. I mean, you know, it has to be relevant to the players that you have. You know, you don't want to ask players to do a job that they cannot do. So, you know, as you said, having a player like Manu is fantastic, not only because he's powerful and he can run through bodies, but he's also got a little bit of finesse to his game. He can pass the ball and he runs very good decoy lines. So, you know, having your best bodies on the field is key to performing in big games. You know, it's a lot easier to coach better players. It's something I always talk to players. You know, I'm very lucky that I'm coaching at a very good level, but, you know, I think it's a lot tougher at that top level. And, you know, people always ask me who the best coach you ever worked with. And I think I have full respect for, you know, guys who are working with schools and teaching kids to play rugby. It's so much tougher than working with professional players.
Who is the best coach you've ever worked with?
I would say Father Canis Murphy, who took me at under-13s at Newbridge, who taught about 70 or 80 kids how to play rugby from scratch. And I think that would be pretty impressive, knowing, having worked with young kids, it can be challenging.
So when you look at the young kids who are coming through the Leicester Academy and when they're 18, 19, what's the main focus? I'm sure it changes for every player, but how much of it is wanting the players simply to bulk up because you know they need to be big if they want to play at the professional level? Is that taken away from the amount of time that they're actually spending on the field?
Yeah, I think it's a really tough question in that, you know, when the guys come through the academy at 18, 19, 20, it's probably that awkward age. And I probably, you know, I obviously wouldn't have made it. I was very small at that age. But, you know, guys, if they're going to go straight into the first team setup, they have to physically be able to hold it together, really. You know, you have to rely on their bodies being able to withstand a lot of hits. And, you know, we've all talked about how big the hits are in rugby now. You know, it's not a contact sport, it's a collision sport these days. And if guys are, you know, really talented, but their bodies aren't going to hold up, there's not much point in, you know, holding on to them as players. It's so tough having a small squad in the Premiership. You know, we've got a salary cap. We can only have so many players. Mm. So I see a lot of really talented young players coming through who, you know, if you're worried about them physically, and we have to probably pick two or three a year, guys are being let go. And these are guys who are going on and playing for other teams. You know, there's numerous other players at other teams that have come through our academy in the Premiership. You know, I suppose Hamish Watson, Scottish Seven, who's pushing hard for a Lions selection. He's a guy who came Leicester through the Leicester Academy. So, and there are numerous others. So it is a tough one. You know, I obviously hope that, you know, that's never been out of it. It's really important that guys at that age are playing games and getting the experience, because that's the way you're going to get better.
Yeah. You just said there, when you were at that age, maybe you weren't the size, certainly right now, that you would have been able to make it. And the position you're in, is there anything you can do at some stage? You just say, stop, we're not going to take the biggest guys, we're going to go for the more skillful player?
You got to try and balance it, is the only answer. And the only reason I say that is because, you know, if you take the skillful player, it's probably going to hurt you in the long run. I think the nature of the game now is that everyone wants wins here and now. So that's all well and good if we say, you know, we're going to take these five young players out of the academy, 18, 19 years of age, and we're going to give them a run of games and we're going to develop them in 2-3 years' time. You know, they'll come through and it'll be fantastic. We may do well in those 3 years, but, you know, if we don't win this season, we most probably won't have a job next season. So it's not really much point. So I think it's the nature of the world at the minute. You know, social media is everything. Everyone has their say. Fans want wins, and, you know, nobody wants to say, oh, well, we're building for a nice team for 4 years' time and we'll be successful in 4 years' time. They want silverware here and now.
Yeah. I was just thinking, if you were playing now as well, you wouldn't be playing for Ireland. If you're playing for Leicester, pure and simply, it seems, no matter what talent you had, you wouldn't be playing for the national team. Was it a huge effect when you were playing?
No, I don't think so. You know, it was a different time, I think. You know, I don't think the academy systems were as good. It was, you know, the game had only been professional for a year, possibly two, the start of 1997. I wasn't in any of the sort of underage academies, underage setups. I hadn't played for Leinster under 20s. So, you know, I was kind of unheard of. I was very lucky in that a coach I had at NACE, which is obviously it was Junior 1 rugby at that stage, had written to Leicester and asked them to give me a trial because, you know, otherwise I'd probably still be playing in NACE. And I came on a three-week trial, and I only went on the three-week trial because, you know, I'd just seen the Lions video in 1997 and I was so impressed that I might get to, you know, come across the guys who I'd watched in that video, Eric Miller, Neil Back, Martin Johnson, Graham Rowntree, that I thought, you know, it'll be a great experience to go for 3 weeks. I never thought I was, you know, probably good enough to make it as a professional player. So to go and to, you know, to get offered a contract was an absolute dream. I ended up staying in Leicester a long time on the back of almost the loyalty that they showed me and trying to repay the faith that they had in me, giving me my opportunity. So from that point of view, I have no regrets about staying in England for the length of time I did. You know, if nowadays it's probably different, and you know, I have to say that, you know, if the rules are, you know, you got to be playing at home to get picked for Ireland, then, you know, that's you got to make your bed and lie in it, really, don't you?
Yeah. What would you have done?
Well, I would have gone because I didn't think there was an avenue here for me. You know, and I would encourage any youngster who thinks that, you know, there's not an avenue for them in Ireland to go and experience it. You know, there's 12 professional teams in the Premiership in England. There's another 12 teams in the Championship who play a very good style of rugby and you know, guys can make a standard of living. You know, I've always been frustrated with provinces in Ireland in that I always think there's a bit of a bottleneck system in that, you know, for a long time, you know, I looked at the Leinster centres of Gordon Darcy and Brian O'Driscoll, and, and I just, you know, every year I saw fantastic players coming through the schools, coming through the provinces, and not many of them kicked on purely because they didn't have an opportunity. And you know, sort of, I would have hoped that maybe some of those guys had, you know, continued playing and gone on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, there almost seems an unfairness with it now. Like, we look at even in the past week or so with Ty Byrne and what he's done with the Scarlets, there was no room for him, quite simply. Now, if he wants to play for Ireland, already people are talking about how we find a route back in for him. Whereas actually, for players like he did the right thing. He took the right option. He's playing professional rugby.
Oh, 100%. He's living his dream. And you know, as you said, he played fantastically well in the semi-final and the final. And you know, I don't know how long his contract is at the Scarlets, but you know, I'm sure there'll be avenues back for him. And you know, he's done the right thing, as you said. You know, he's gone there, he's living it, and now it's you know, it's a choice for him that he's got to make, and it's a tough one. And I don't envy him. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes. Yeah. But at least it is a chat and a conversation with Joe Schmidt, and see if he's genuinely in his plans, and then see, you know, potentially where he'd want to play if he came home.
Do you see an unfairness in that he has to make that decision, that he's going to come back to one of the Irish provinces? Again, he may, no matter where he's going to have to fight for his place. But there he is, enjoying a very successful professional career, playing at a level against Leinster, playing against these players week in, week out, where he can be judged. But if he wants to play for Ireland, he has to move back home.
Oh, it's massively unfair. But that's the way it is. And, you know, unfortunately, that's the way the IRFU have made their laws and rules. And, you know, he'll have to, he'll just have to deal with it. It's unfair. Do I like it? No. Do I think he'll like it? I don't think so. I think, you know, he should have the right and the choice to play wherever he wants, and shouldn't be able to affect his selection. I'm sure actually we're probably going down a legal route here. We could probably get some lawyers in and they could probably discuss the legalities of it. But it's a, it's not fair on him, but you know, he's doing what he's got to do. He, as you said, he went over there when he didn't have an opportunity here. He's worked very, very hard to get himself into that Scarlets team, and all of a sudden he's got a Pro 12 medal, and now people are going, oh, maybe he is good enough to play for an Irish province.
Are Leicester then looking, or is there an opportunity for Leicester to look at the Irish provinces and look at, we see the Under 20 World Cup on at the moment, all those players aren't going to make it at their provinces, that is particularly at Leinster, which is often held up as arguably the best academy in Europe right now, that there is such talent there, they can only take in 3, 4, 5 of them to the senior squad every year. There's a real opportunity to go, somebody else has done the hard work, and bring these players in.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and certainly it's something that we're always open-minded to, and that we actively look to do. You know, we've got scouts that go to all of these, you know, junior championships and look at them, and certainly I've had a lot of footage come across my desk from different people and different parents in trying to get guys into our setup. It is difficult. I think, you know, if you've been born and bred and played in academy systems, and you want to play for Leinster, then that's where your heart is. It's definitely difficult to get guys away. You know, I suppose, you know, Tig is the example. That, you know, if you don't feel like there's a route, then, you know, there's always other opportunities out there. So I'd be hopeful that certainly over the coming years we can pick some more players up who haven't been taken onto the books. And I think, you know, for me, from a personal experience, I think it's one of the reasons that I probably made it as a professional player, because, you know, that little bit of a chip on your shoulder really helps you, using that, you know, when you sort of, every time you go to play, you think, well, you know, I'm not good enough. I'm not the player that I'll prove them wrong, sort of thing. And that was definitely something that worked for me.
Jordan, thanks a lot for coming into us. Enjoy your holidays.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.